Okay, well, we're in the field today with Barbara Kohlander of Mountain Survival Services.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara came from the high up in the mountains to pay a visit today. And she, what'd you drive, Barbara, about 100 miles today?
I don't know how far it is, but it takes about an hour.
It took about an hour, and she went to Pascal Badar's class. And we've interviewed Pascal and Mia in the past. And what is his organization's name again? It's Urban Outdoor Skills.
Yeah.
So he has a website, urbanoutdoorskills.com. And for people who want to learn about wild foods and gourmet cooking, Pascal is really the class to go to. So why did you drive so far? Can't you do that kind of thing up on your mountain, Barbara?
I do that kind of thing up on the mountain, and I have been teaching wild plant identification for a long time. And I got interested. I love to cook, and I love to incorporate wild foods into my cooking. But I met Pascal at Dirt Time a couple of years ago, and he had brought some specialty gourmet products that he made with wild foods, and I was really impressed. And so I was interested in following up with that. And when I had an opportunity, I went to some more of his classes. And it is a drive, but I really like to learn more about it from different angles. And I love the stuff that he makes. Also, there's other plants that we don't have up in the San Bernardino Mountains that grow out where Pascal does his classes. And he and Mia do some amazing things with wild foods. And so whenever I have an opportunity, which is usually about once a month in the good weather, I'll drive out there and we'll not only see what new creations they've come up with, but also we like to go out and collect what we don't have on the mountain and take it up there and do some pretty amazing things with those.
So you're learning from Pascal how to take your self-reliance skills really to an art, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I like to cook, you know, with wild foods, and, well, I just like to cook in general, but I definitely like real food, and I think wild foods are much more not only nutritious, but simple and pure than anything you can get in the grocery store. So whenever I have a chance, I look for ways to incorporate wild foods into our diet.
And, you know, you... You had a large group, and you did a lot of different things today. Why don't you tell us what you all did today on the outing and what you learned from Pascal?
Yeah, Pascal, he has been getting some really large groups, and I think partially due to Meetup, which is online, and he started a Meetup group and started advertising his classes online, and lots of people came today. There was 30 people, not including my daughter and I and Pascal and Mia. And we went out and took a walk, and he did his, you know, some plant ID. And it's always different, too, when we come out from month to month, because there's different plants growing or they're at different stages. So it's always interesting to see where the plants are at different times of the year, too, and what's available and what we can do. Last time we got some olives, and I took them home and actually did some olive curing. And some of them turned out really good. Others, I liked the dry salt method. But then the currants are in season, and so we also have currants in the San Bernardino Mountains, but they're nowhere near ready. But the ones are ready down here, and I had seen that they had been making currant jam. So we went out there, we identified some plants, and then we collected currants for about an hour and a half. And then
now, for somebody who doesn't know what a currant is, could you describe it?
Well, it's like a berry.
It's like a berry.
I don't know. It's a berry.
Well, sometimes currants in the supermarket are what they call currants are actually grapes.
Are they?
So there are currants and gooseberries all across North America.
Yeah.
But what I tell people here is that sometimes it looks like a poison oak plant because you have a three-parted
mm-hmm.
leaf and
mm-hmm.
it's like a long vine. And what were the fruits were different colors, right?
Yeah.
They're small,
mm-hmm.
like a little BB, right?
Mm. No, they weren't that small.
Okay.
They were like little grapes, almost like champagne grapes.
Like little champagne grapes, okay. And what kind of colors were they?
Well, we had a golden, like a sunny golden color, and then there was some red ones and some dark purple, almost black.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to take them home. We got all three, and I'm going to take them home and make a tricolor jam.
Were the flavors different from each of the currants?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. Yeah. And so I liked it a lot. So we collected currants, and then we walked further, and just identified some other stuff and then went back to the tables, and everybody met back there, and he and Mia had made some wild plant pesto, which it was pretty good, actually. I liked it a lot. I always like stuff like that. And then we...
Now, pesto is normally basil, isn't it? Chopped up fine. So what did you make it from?
No, he made it with the regular ingredients, garlic and wild plants and...
What wild plants?
The lamb's quarter, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure what else was in it, because I came back, I was kind of straggling behind, but it was pretty good. And then Mia was making a lamb's quarter, like a wild spinach dish, and it had some onions and garlic and olive oil. And then one of the plants that I hadn't seen before is a lemonade berry? Berry, right. And so they made a lemonade out of that, and it was pretty interesting, actually.
Had you had that before?
No, yeah. I hadn't.
So lemonade berry is fairly common in the chaparral. You have these little red sticky fruits,
mm-hmm.
and then you can just mix it in your water and you get kind of a natural lemonade.
Yeah.
People in the eastern United States wouldn't have that, but they have the staghorn sumac,
mm-hmm.
which they could use. Well, that sounds really good. So what else did you do?
Well, then my daughter and I went back out after everybody started to disperse, after they tried the different food, and we went back out and collected some more stuff. I wanted to get some elderflowers, because I've been doing a lot with elderberry the last couple of years, actually a few years now, and last year I made elderberry wine that was just fantastic and cordial. And then this year I wanted to try elderflower cordial, which I made, and it's pretty interesting. It's very sweet and floral. It's really actually pleasant. And then I have recipes for elderflower wine and champagne, and I'm not much of a drinker, but when you make your own, it's just... as fermented as you want it to be, basically, and it's really not heavy, like you don't drink it to get high or drunk, and so it's actually medicinal, and I like it. So I'm experimenting with elders, and we have elders on the mountain, but they also are later blossoming. We went out looking for them, we couldn't find them, so we've collected elderflowers and some peppercorns from the pepper trees, and...
Now, the elder is found all over the country,
uh-huh.
but the pepper you're mentioning is a Brazilian introduction that's very common in California. Why don't you describe that tree?
Well, they're pretty tall, and then they have these drooping, beautiful drooping branches that are kind of willowy in appearance, I think, and then they have sprays of red, what look like berries, actually, but they're actually little peppercorns covered with a kind of a pinkish... almost a coral color coating, I guess, or a shell. Yeah.
It's a very common street tree in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you guys do with those?
Well, I got that tip from Pascal. I didn't know what he was talking about when he was mentioning them. And so when we went out last time to his last walk, he showed them to us, and I tried it. I could not believe it tastes just like pepper. And I, of course, buy peppercorns and use them, but I also use them in pickling and just cooking, so I gathered some today to take home.
Good, good. And did you guys make salad too?
They did make a lamb's quarter salad, but I didn't have any.
Yeah, listen to that. We hear a red-tailed hawk or a Cooper's hawk outside. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about why you got into this and how you're using wild foods to increase your self-reliance up at the mountain.
Well, I got into this years and years ago, actually, I think 16 years ago now, because my stepfather and my mother were into this. And so...
why are you laughing?
'Cause you know why. Anyway, so Christopher's my stepfather, for those of you that don't recognize that fact. But anyway, so I really didn't know much about it, but then learned quickly, and I was very interested in it, and I have continued to build interest over the years. And now I love wild foods, as I already mentioned, and I think that they're a lot more pure than anything you can get, and very much more nutritious than anything you can get. in the stores nowadays. And in fact,
so are you worried about the quality of what you buy in the stores, or the continuity of what you buy in the stores?
Absolutely. I don't believe in genetically modified foods, and I avoid them completely.
I was going to say, can you really avoid them completely?
It's really hard now because everything's so. They don't want to label genetically modified foods, and also there's so many pesticides, and the produce that you buy in the store is so old that it really doesn't even have any energy left or life left in it, and or much less nutrition. And then dairy products are ultra-pasteurized, which kills the nutrition and the food quality and the enzymes and everything. So I've been studying nutrition for at least 25, maybe 30 years, and I think that it's really difficult to get good quality food, but if you know wild foods, you can go out and collect it. Most people are just amazed at what grows right in their yard that they actually pull out and throw away.
Yeah.
And so more and more people actually are very, very interested in wild foods and what they can, and not just because of the quality, but because of the price of stuff nowadays. And so...
Well, I know that that's one reason why many people get into wild foods. It's more nutritious, and it's an alternative to the way things are grown on the farms. But there are other things that you do as well to get safer foods for yourself and your family. Like you grow your own food, you have chickens, mm-hmm. and you mentioned you're starting a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us about some of those things? Because these are simple things that anybody could do with their family or with their neighbors.
I've been working more towards sustainability for a long time, but particularly lately. And there's a lot of social upheaval going on, I feel that way, and friends of mine do too. We're recognizing things may not always be the same. In fact, you should always expect change, and I've known that a long time. So I happen to live in a nice place in the mountains that I don't have. My neighbors aren't too close, and so I am able to have chickens and do gardening and pretty much do whatever I want without bothering people. In fact, we had a rooster for a while, and it didn't even bother the neighbors, but he was really something. We ended up having to find him a home. He was kind of aggressive, but we have laying hens, and they lay eggs, and we love it because I only feed them organic food, and they eat all our scraps that we can't use up fast enough, and they're just, it's really a nice arrangement, and I would encourage, we live up in the mountains, we get snow. We had eggs year-round because we use a heat lamp to extend their daylight period, and they're cold hardy chickens, and so we're hoping to actually get a goat too for milk. And I do as much gardening as I can. We have a short growing season, so I started seeds indoors, and we have a grow light where we started seeds early, and we're moving along with that. It can be challenging, but I do classes in other kinds of self-reliance, back-to-basics type skills where we make our own home cleaning products out of simple, inexpensive ingredients that work better, in my opinion, than store-bought stuff, much cheaper and very effective and pleasant to use. And then also skin care and body care products.
Give me some examples of what you're talking about.
Well, I make my favorite is a citrus scrub that we use like cleanser in the bathroom and in the kitchen for the sinks. And it's simply baking soda, and I think it has some salt and, Epsom salt. The recipe. Then you add orange, the citrus part of it is orange essential oil and lemon, and we have different essential oils, and then you just use it in the bathtub, and it's fantastic. And we also make like a spray cleaner out of vinegar and essential oils, and it's very nice. It works fantastically, and it doesn't hurt you.
Now, did you just learn how to make your own household products by experimentation, or did you take a class or read a book or what?
No, I read a lot, and I also search online for other people's ideas.
Okay, so like most of us, you're just learning one thing at a time, mm-hmm. putting it into practice, and seeing how it works.
Yeah, and one of my great tricks is that if I want to learn something and I haven't gotten to it yet, I schedule a class where I have to teach it, and then I have to learn it real quick.
That's good. That is one way. That's true.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's nothing like having to teach something, and you could do the research and just stay a step ahead of the students.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
And then back to, well, we also do some body care classes, which have been really nice, because I don't like all the toxic stuff out there, and I haven't used toxic body care products or toothpaste or deodorants or home care products for a long time.
Now let me ask you a question. Now, I'm not entirely ignorant on this, but there are a lot of things in the stores. There are a lot of products at the Trader Joe's and at the health food stores. How do you determine if a product out there is toxic or not? Because I assume that there are a lot of perfectly safe products on the market, or am I mistaken?
I don't know if there's any perfectly safe. I think that you really have to do your research, and I've been doing research for a long time, so I know better than most people what to avoid as far as body care products. There's parabens and sulfates and dyes and fragrances, and I happen to be really really sensitive to these things and intolerant. I can't handle synthetic fragrances, for one thing, so chemicals really make me sick, and a lot of food additives make me sick. And so just because the FDA says that something's safe, it doesn't mean that it is, okay?
So,
and in fact, I highly question everything out there that's for sale. And if, like, say, for instance, if a food product has more than 5 ingredients and you can't pronounce some of them, then I don't usually buy it.
Well, that's a good start. Remember Andy Rudy on 60 Minutes?
Mm-hmm.
He once made a joke about, I think it was bread, and he was reading the ingredients, and he was saying, now, what the heck is this? That's not something I have on my shelf in the kitchen that I put in my cake or my bread.
Right.
And so that was sort of his policy. But are there no commercial products that or brands that you could recommend? Not that I'm not trying to plug any products, but I'm just curious.
Well, I like
if there are,
there are
maybe
some companies. Like, I used Tom's of Maine for a long, long time for toothpaste, and now I use something called Tooth Soap, because it really is, it's saponified soap. You can get it online, and it works really well for cleaning your teeth and actually balancing the pH in your mouth. And it is kind of like if you were a kid and you said something bad, or you smart talked your elders, then they'd put soap in your mouth. It is kind of reminiscent to that. But
that's the soap you use on your daughter?
No, I don't. But she doesn't smart talk me too much anyway.
That's good.
But anyway, I do have certain products that I like. And I don't know if I could really suggest anything but doing your own research and keeping things simple as possible. And it takes a long time sometimes, but also people ask me, well, where do I start? Well, you start with one simple thing and work from there. It can be overwhelming even just to change your eating habits once you learn how bad people eat, and how, you know, it's really overwhelming to think of all the changes that you really need to make and all the information out there and all the lies we've been told over the years. And I just had somebody yesterday ask me, she's becoming aware of, you know, first of all, about her health, and, you know, she's overweight and she's having a struggle figuring out what to do. And she heard me talking to another friend, and she said, will you please tell me where do I start? And oh my gosh, it's huge. And so I said, well, just start with a couple of basic things. Don't eat hydrogenated fat, and you know, avoid fast food. You know, just start there and make little changes. And then once you start that and you start feeling better, you just keep doing your research.
Right.
You know, and
so a lot of it is knowing what to avoid, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people who don't know where to start, there probably are certain basic nutrition books that you could read. I have my favorites, but one of the things that when people come to visit, I don't have any salt, and people are surprised. I have no white sugar.
Yeah.
But there's no use for it.
Right.
I there's salt in everything already, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't need to add salt. And plus, your taste buds develop a sense of the flavor for the food item. And white sugar, I mean, I do use honey. I do use maple syrup.
Yeah.
I do use the agave syrup. I do use certain sweeteners, but I virtually never buy white sugar.
Things as simple as that, too, people just don't know. And white sugar is basically very addictive, and it's really useless, and it's harmful to your body. But pure, raw, local honey is one of the best things that you can use for a sweetener. And even molasses, you know, blackstrap molasses, it's kind of strong for some people, but there's so many alternatives that are healthy, there really is no use for sugar in your diet, and it's in everything, too. And unfortunately, my family, I raised my kids without fast food and without soda, and we didn't even have energy drinks, but I strongly encourage my older kids not to drink them because they're just very harmful and addictive. And
a doctor just came out saying that not only are they not necessary for teenagers and youth, but they could be harmful mm-hmm. to be drinking those things.
Absolutely. And also, you know, then you don't drink enough water, and obviously water is essential for life and for good health. And so certain things like that, I also raise my kids without TV because I don't like the messaging that, you know, all those commercials that basically...
Wait, you said you don't watch any TV?
No, not what, really. We watch movies sometimes, but we don't.
What about
watch
the Rockford Files?
No, I don't watch the Rockford Files.
No, that was my favorite show on TV, the Rockford Files. It was all filmed around Los Angeles and Pasadena.
Yeah.
You really don't watch the Rockford Files?
I have not had TV for 25 years, I want to say, maybe. And so my kids read, actually, and that's nice, and they play outside. And I think it's a good alternative to video games and TV all day. And so they also go on wild food walks with me, and even if they gripe about it later on, they remember stuff, and then people are very impressed that they'll pop out with these answers. And
you know, there's a big difference between children and adults who say they learned something, and I'll ask them a few questions, and they say, well, I saw it on YouTube, versus somebody who's actually experienced something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, you realize seeing it on YouTube is not doing it, and it's not really knowing it.
Right,
and
right.
So I'm not against TV because I recommend certain movies quite a bit, but
yeah.
I am all for learning by direct experience.
Yeah, and there's a big difference, too, for sure.
And then you were mentioning, okay, wild food, learning about wild foods is one way to increase your self-reliance, because where you happen to live, you could get isolated by storms or fires and have to take care of yourself. What are some of the other things? You mentioned you grow some of your food. And
uh-huh.
What about the co-op idea?
Yeah, well, we're getting ready to start a co-op up on the mountain, which is long overdue. I do love the co-op idea where, you know, the quality of food that you can typically get from markets is not good unless you have a market like ours in Loma Linda. We still don't get down there enough, and it can be overpriced, but we like the alternative of getting local foods from farmers that don't use a lot of, you know, hardly anything on their crops. They use natural methods for pest control or fertilization, and fresh local food, even if it has some kind of pest control or inorganic stuff, is infinitely better than the, I guess, the U.S. Other countries use untold amounts of pesticides and additives and inorganic fertilizers and chemicals, and then they put wax on their fruit, and there's so many things, they irradiate their foods. And so if you get local food, even if it isn't certified organic, you're better off than what you get in the store.
Well, at least you could talk to the farmer and find out what they're doing.
Right, right. And you can get a sense of whether they're, you know, well, I mean, if I go to the farmer's market, which we do quite often, actually, if I go by the stands of food, I can actually sense whether it's good or not. And it used to be I'd go up and smell it, and you can actually smell if it has pesticides or stuff on it.
So your sensitivity is such that you could smell some kind of chemical that's not going to be good for
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
I want you to just back up a minute and... we hear the word co-op all the time. What exactly does that mean? Because you mentioned you're getting it from the farmers, so how is that different from just buying it at a farmer's market? What exactly does a co-op mean?
Well, a group of people that all want to go in on quantities of good foods or, you know, certain items can, it's a cooperative, and it's usually, you know, a group of local people that get together a certain day of the week, and one person or a few of the people will be in charge of ordering or picking up or having delivered quantities of good foods or whatever it may be, and then everybody gets together once every week or two and splits the cost of it, which of course if you buy in bulk then you're going to get a better cost, and also you're getting as fresh as you can get. And so we're starting a co-op up on the mountain because it's something that we have a lot of people up there that like that idea, but we usually have to travel to get good food like that.
So that means at somebody's home has to be the drop-off spot.
Yeah.
So, and then it would mean maybe a local neighborhood or a part of a city, that one person or members of the co-op would have stuff in bulk arranged.
Right.
Delivered to that house so that everybody goes and gets it at the appointed time.
Right.
And supposedly you're getting a discount.
Yeah,
I guess you would
you
be.
You do. In fact, it's a misconception, even with farmers markets, that you'll pay a lot more for your produce, but it's actually exactly the opposite. And if you go to the farmer's market, you can get so much more food and good quality food for your money than if you go to the market nowadays. Uh-huh. It may have been different before, but now it's by far the alternative as far as cost and quality. And
yeah, I'd have to say from my experience, I've told people that cost isn't necessarily the main reason you're going to a farmer's market, because I think some things are a little, at least in my area, things are a little more expensive or no different from the supermarket, but at least you could talk to the individual farmer.
Not only
and
that,
ask questions.
But it's always better quality, in my opinion.
And fresher.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So do you want to share anything else about the kind of food storage and the methods that you're doing at your home?
Well, yeah. Besides doing more gourmet cooking that luckily I was introduced to by Pascal and Mia, I've been doing a lot more canning, which is something I always wanted to learn how to do, and I thought it was a lot more difficult than it actually is. So we buy, say, for instance, I've been buying strawberries, organic strawberries, in bulk from the farmer's market because they're in season right now, and pickles, cucumbers, and doing pickling and strawberry jam, and it's really neat. I like that. Then we're going to start learning how to make soap pretty soon, too. So we're doing different things that seem like necessary and almost forgotten skills for a lot of people.
How much would you say that you're actually saving versus going out and buying strawberry jam? I mean, when you go buy the strawberries in bulk and you process them at home, you have to buy the bottles, of course, but you can reuse them. I mean, talk us through the process and I'd like to hear the pricing, the savings of doing this, aside from the fact that you like doing it, of course.
I love doing it, and it isn't so much the cost that is appealing to me, it's the quality. You can rarely get a really good jar of jam that's 100% organic, locally grown, and then with limited amounts of sugar or organic sugar. I like that. And if you do go out and buy a jar of organic, certified organic, you know, strawberry jam, you're paying actually, I think, a lot for it. And then I'm not sure what it breaks down to, because I do not large batch. That what I do isn't considered large batch canning, although I made quite a few the last time. But what I do is I buy the strawberries and I get those three packs of baskets. I think I got eight of them last time, so I had a whole bunch of strawberries. And you have to process strawberries right away or keep them in a cool place. But they do tend to start getting moldy, so I take the tops off the very first night when I get home and then rinse them and put them in a big kettle, and I add sugar to it, and then I let it sit overnight or maybe a couple of days. The sugar, and also I'll put lemon juice in it too. If you mix it up, it coats them and it prevents any kind of mold, and then they just kind of blend in with the sweet. I use organic sugar and I don't use a huge amount. And then I will just, when I'm ready to process it, I'll heat it up just enough. I like things as raw as possible, so I try not to boil the heck out of everything, because I think you lose a lot of nutrition when you cook things.
Well, you know, I just thought about something. I meet a lot of people who are totally into raw foods.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really can raw foods, can you? You can't keep them raw and can them, can you?
There are some things. I did do some fresh strawberries that I actually did not cook, but I poured a solution of, it was white wine and some organic sugar and, gosh, I can't remember the recipe. I think I had some orange juice, some fresh squeezed orange juice, and I actually put them in with wild fennel fronds and then some sections of Meyer lemon, which I love. They're kind of sweet. And I put them all in a jar, and then I poured the warm liquid in, and then I processed it. But I didn't actually cook what was in it, but I did process it in the canner so that it would seal.
I see. So it kept well.
Perfectly fine, yeah. I mean, you have to recommend, if you're teaching someone to do canning, to follow the directions and make sure you don't end up with botulism. So I don't recommend it unless you really have the right foods and you do a lot of research on what you can. You see, that had the acid from the lemons and the juice, and so that it's different than if you're doing something like tomatoes, or you actually don't have to cook pickles.
Well, I was just thinking, so really that was there is a distinction between canning and pickling, that it sounds like, right? I mean,
yeah,
excuse
vinegar,
my ignorance, but
no. But
the vinegar bath is basically your pickling, and the
right. Canning
is where you're heating and letting
right.
it seal properly
right,
so you don't
right.
need refrigeration.
Right. Well, we pour hot water over the pickling jars, and it does seal the lid, and so you can keep it out of the fridge, and, you can keep it out anyway, because the vinegar, so it's a science, really, but it isn't that hard, and once you start it, I guess I kind of have a knack for it, but I like to experiment a lot. I don't like to follow recipes too much, and then I end up coming up with some really great creations, and other things don't turn out sometimes, but for the most part, they do, but it really is it's easier than I thought, and I think that storing food this time of year all through spring and fall, then you end up in the winter months with stuff that you don't have in the, normally.
And have you been doing a lot of pickling, or much pickling also?
Yeah, I started pickling last year with my elderberry vinegar. I tried to make wine the year before last, and it turned to vinegar, but I ended up using it for pickling, and it was fantastic.
What did you pickle with it?
I actually did some cactus, the prickly pear cactus, and then I did some, oh my gosh, I did so much stuff.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, people who live in the West know that there's prickly pear cactus everywhere, and actually Dolores used to have a cookbook called I think it was a cactus cookbook.
Hmm.
It had like hundreds of recipes that one of the local cactus societies made.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the prickly pear, of course, is you have to peel it to get all those stickers off,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you do?
Yeah. You scrape the stickers off or burn them off over the stove.
And then what most people don't like is that they get very slimy.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Actually, for pickling, I parboil it just for maybe 20 or 30 seconds, and it turns this beautiful bright green, and then the excess moisture, which that's what parboiling does for canning vegetables and stuff. If you just parboil it, then it pulls out some of the moisture so that it doesn't shrink up and end up a half a jar of what you're trying to do. But for prickly pear, it makes that slimy excess moisture drop out, and then you use that and they end up crisper.
Okay.
So that's what I do. But if you can eat prickly pear fresh in salads and chop it up, or you can, I like the scrambled eggs and prickly pear and onions and garlic. And so there's lots of things you can do with it. I'm sure I don't know everything, but I was canning prickly pear and some other stuff last year.
Do you do anything with the prickly pear fruit yet?
I did try that last year, and it's difficult because of the seeds, but I also got the flower buds this year and was trying to get the thorns off. It's very difficult to have that flower intact, but I did pickle some of the flower buds with the flower intact, and it was real hard to get the spines off, so it was very time-consuming.
Yeah, that's always the big deal with the cactus. So what else do you pickle?
Well, cucumbers, for one thing, and then I did some mixed vegetables this year, and I just used apple cider vinegar. I have some different pickling solutions. I just get books on it, and there's all different things you can do, but I really like it a lot. I gathered the olives, and I did some pickled olives and some dry salted olives, and then some marinated olives in olive oil, and It's just really fun. It is time consuming, but I think the further along you go and the more experience you get, the less time it takes.
Right, right. Now, you learned a lot of this from Pascal, but and you did your own research as well.
I learned a little bit from Pascal. I don't get together with them too much, but we're friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I see what they do, and sometimes I'll write them and say, hey, can you give me your recipe?
Well, it sounds like you've created a lot of unique, or you found and discovered a lot of unique recipes of your own. Do you have plans to compile any of this into a cookbook of your own?
I think so. After, time goes on, I do keep the recipes when I remember to write them down. And then I get a good ribbing from my significant other for not writing them down, because then I can't remember what I did.
Well, that is how recipes books get formed. You know,
right.
People, they experiment and a lot of things don't work, and you put into the book those things that do work.
Yeah. And so I put my daughter to work last time when I was working with some of the things, because a lot of times I'm in there, trying new things, and I don't have time to stop and write it down. I'm just so busy. I get on a roll and I kind of get feverish with it, So.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So I want you to tell people how they can contact you and what are the programs that you have coming up in the future.
Well, right now I'm doing wild food walks and wild food cooking workshops, and I'm teaching sustainability classes about, the natural home care and natural body care products, and also doing some survival skills and some preparedness classes. And I'm on Facebook at Wild Mountain Services, just like it sounds. And then I also have a meetup group of my own that I started that's called Wild Mountain Sustainability Group. And I post my classes on there. I have an email. It's wildmountainwoman@hotmail.com. And it's spelled wildmtnwoman@hotmail.com. And my phone number is 909-436-4863. I don't have a website, but I like Facebook and my meetup. It's enough work.
If people came from a long distance, are there places that they could stay up at the mountains there where you live?
Yeah, it's a mountain resort, so we do have hotels and little bed and breakfast places up there, and there's also camping this time of year. So it is. It's a nice place to go to do some classes, and I can also go to other people. So if you contact me, if you get a group together that wants to do something in their neighborhood, I can usually travel for a big enough group.
Okay, good. And you were also mentioning how you get food in bulk, and how do you have a process for selecting the farmers or the source when you're buying like grains or beans or something in bulk? Because you want a good supply in case you can't you can't get to the store.
Right. Well, I try to avoid hybrids, and I try to go for, like, with grains, wheat.
No. Yeah. Just for the novice, what's wrong with the hybrid?
I prefer the heirloom grains and heirloom vegetables because things.
And everybody knows what an heirloom is, right?
It means that it's the original plant, basically, and that you can keep. People have been saving their seeds for hundreds of years. Ever since, like an original grain would be amaranth or quinoa or spelt. And typically, if you go for certified organic, you can find heirloom seeds. There's heirloom seed societies that you can contact in order to grow. It's just a pure, old line of, I don't know how you say it.
Well, seed grows that plant.
Right.
Where some of these seeds that the companies have produced, they want to control that.
Yeah, they want to keep selling their seeds, so they don't want you to be able to collect the seeds and keep growing.
That's exactly it.
But like wheat is so over-hybridized, it's not even anything resembling the old ancient wheat anymore. And that's why I think a lot of people are allergic to wheat.
Could be. There's a lot of things do change, even naturally they change.
And then the GMOs, it's horrifying to me. It's like Frankenstein in the food chain, and I just don't want to have any part of it. And
is it difficult, though, to avoid these things?
It is, but if you are steadfast and you want something, like me, I'm very stubborn, and I just won't settle for feeding my children inferior food, because really, the only thing, we're subjected to a lot of toxins and a lot of pollution and a lot of things that we can't avoid, but what we can control is our own health to the best extent that we can. I mean, you know, if you make it a point to be as healthy as you can and avoid as what you put in your body being toxic, then you can handle other things that, you know, you can't control that are in your environment.
Right. Well, as far as the seed goes, though, aren't there organizations to get the heirloom seeds, or how do you get those?
Well, you can do a search on heirloom seeds. And I actually ordered some that I really like from BBB Seed online, and I got heirloom seeds, and I planted them, and they are doing fantastically. They all germinated, and they're all just doing really well. Strong plants.
I've seen a number of seed companies whose seeds are sold at various health food stores that are heirloom seeds. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind, you could get the heirloom seed and still be growing it non-organically if you're concerned about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of factors from beginning to end to get a healthful product.
There are.
Yeah.
But also, when we buy stuff that we haven't grown ourselves, I go for the certified organic whenever I can, or heirloom quality foods. You cannot always, you know, but we get as fresh as possible, as local as possible, as organic as possible, and just try to count on, I'm big on energy and intuition as well, so if something feels wrong, even if it says it's right, I usually know.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could, we have just a few minutes left, but if you could share some simple tips for organic gardening for somebody starting. They have the right seeds, they want to grow foods with no pesticides. What are some of the issues, step-by-step, that they may need to be concerned with, and maybe how do they go about learning these things?
That's a whole huge, it's a science in itself, and what I would say is that you have to look at your own area and your own particulars and try to amend your soil. You have to find out if it's the right soil and what plants grow in your area. For instance, up on the mountain, we can only grow certain plants at certain times of the year and have to have the right conditions, the right growing season. We have
so
gophers.
So looking for things appropriate to your area,
right,
number one.
Appropriate to your area, and then you have to test your soil or do container gardening and get a reputable source of soil and mulch. Of course, we do composting at our house, and that you can find out through the county. They actually have a composting class that they'll do for free, and a lot of times you just do a search and you ask around and you can find out certain things. Basically, you just have to do your research, but I would say that getting the good quality seeds is really important, and then not adding anything like even some soils that you buy and some mulches are not as good as they sound. You know, they have chemicals or human waste added to them or all kinds of stuff. It's pretty scary. So you just have to do your homework.
Okay, so one could make their own compost. Yeah, I know you do that. Mulching is stuff that you put on the surface.
Right.
So what I found in my years of gardening is that the more care you give to the soil, the better your plants are going to be. That my rule of thumb has been, build the soil by whatever means necessary. There's the Rodale's Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening. That's a fantastic, first book. And the plants that are in rich soil, they are more drought tolerant, they're more freeze tolerant, they're more insect resistant. And this is a good opportunity for me to give a shameless plug for my self-sufficient home book, because I do have a whole section on the considerations for planting your own garden to produce your own food.
That's my favorite book of yours.
It's your favorite book?
It is.
Are you just saying that?
No, I like it.
I think you're just saying that.
I'm not just saying it. I really got a lot out of that book.
Yeah, that's the book where I interviewed about 24 people. Some were gardeners, some were producing their own power, some had alternative toilets, some collected rain. But I do like the section where it was a quick overview of organic gardening methods. And in a sense, it's a summary of what you find in the Rodale books.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all here now, and it's all applicable to anybody, anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, well, did you have any final comments, Barbara?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Do you have any more questions?
How does your garden grow? No, actually, I'm glad you were able to come by today. And did you want to say goodbye, Mayakota? Mayakota's here hiding under a blanket.
Hi.
She said hi. Okay. So we've been here with Barbara Kohlander of Mountain Survival Services. Give your website one more time.
I don't have a website.
Excuse me, give your contact information one more time.
Okay, I have Facebook, which is Wild Mountain Services. You just do a search, and I also have the new meetup group, Wild Mountain Sustainability Group. You can search for that. And anybody can join that, by the way. You don't have to be local, although that's how I started it, was with local, getting a community involved with each other to get people aware of their own strengths, for one thing, and what they have to contribute to a community group of like-minded people. But we do a lot of different things, and I'm hoping to really expand. I had people signing up from all over Southern California before I knew it, and they were so excited about my group, so that's pretty cool. And what I'm hoping is that people that can't really travel that far will start their own groups like that in their own city and own neighborhood. And then also I have, my email is Wild Mountain Woman, mountain is MTN, and otherwise just as it sounds, at hotmail.com. And my phone number is 909-436-4863.
And also, folks, if you're listening to this, you look on your computer screen, you're going to see my website, and it has a link to Barbara. It has her email there and a way to reach her. And I want to add that, to emphasize what Barbara was just stating, that we really would like, you know, we're really sincere in what we do. We'd like to see people improve their lots. To complain about life doesn't get you anywhere. You want to be a productive, you want to just take charge where you can in your own life. I remember Coach Wooden used to always tell his athletes, don't whine, you know, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, don't whine, and just be try to achieve success. And what we're talking about in self-reliance is in a sense saving our communities and saving the world by our personal lifestyle changes. And so we're advocates for that. We do our classes. We'd love you to come to our classes and buy our books, but we really want you to take these things to heart and use them in your own life. So thank you.
Everybody can't do everything, but everybody has their own strengths too, and so people that get together in a group and actually help each other out, that's really the way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, so that's all of our time. Thank you for joining us today.